This is the Soulful BR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 149.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got an interview for you with Jennifer Holloway, and it's all about how to define your personal brand. But before we get to the interview, I just wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit about our sponsor, ResponseSource. ResponseSource is a media inquiry service that puts journalists who are looking for help with stories in touch with people who want to be featured in the media. So that's people like you. And if you subscribe to ResponseSource, you'll get dozens of emails in your inbox every day from journalists from the likes of the BBC, The Guardian, and Grazia magazine. So there's no need to write press releases or pitches to journalists. You simply reply to the messages in your inbox. Now, using ResponseSource has resulted in some fantastic coverage for the clients that I work with. And one example that comes to mind is Kate Beavis, an expert in vintage style who's recently been featured in the Daily Mail, in Top Sante magazine and the Metro newspaper, simply from replying to a few emails. So if you'd like to find out if ResponseSource could help you to get press coverage for your business and have a free trial of the service, then head over to responsesource.com/Janet Murray. That's responsesource.com/Janet Murray, and I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. And now, on with the main part of the show. Joining me on the show today is Jennifer Holloway. So Jennifer is an author, speaker, coach, and an expert in personal branding. Her book, Personal Branding for Brits, is the number one book for personal branding on Amazon. And I know that many of you are really interested in really kind of developing your personal brand. So I thought she was the ideal person to have on the show. So welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you, Janet.
So might you be able to start by telling us a little bit about you and how you got started?
Yeah. So in terms of my big chunk of my career, it was spent doing PR. It was spent initially working in and then running press offices. So journalist has a question, they phone up, I'm the one dealing with it. A lot of my job was about getting stuff in the media. A lot of it was about keeping it out of the media. And that was where I really got my grounding in learning very quickly. I have to sell me to a journalist before I should even begin to try and sell my company or my story, because a journalist has hundreds of different people they could go to for a quote or a comment or a case study. How do you get them picking up the phone to you? So that's sort of where my grounding in personal branding, selling me before the company came in. And I loved that job for 15 years. And then one day woke up and thought, I don't love this anymore. And so I decided I would take what I had learnt with relation to selling me to journalists and apply that to business as a whole. So in 2008, I set up my own business, helping people to blow their own trumpets without sounding like an idiot. And it's that last bit that's the key bit, because that's the bit that everybody's scared of. And did that, started off much more as a traditional coach, but then very much niched into personal brand. And I have to say, that's where my business took off. It's sort of counterintuitive to niche, because you think you need to make yourself available to everybody. But I have to say, the more specific I've been, the better my profits have been. And did that for a long while, working with SMEs, then have grown my business. I now work primarily with corporates, but I do still have a lot of SMEs and entrepreneurs contacting me for help. So that's why in 2013, I launched the book Personal Branding for Brits, to give them a, you know, cost-effective do-it-yourself guide. And I should say at this point, it is not just for Brits. It's more personal branding for non-American cultures. In as much as, and that's nothing against the Americans, but there's no denying that across the pond, you know, standing up in front of a room and saying, look at me, I'm great, gets you a round of applause. Whereas in most other cultures, definitely in Britain, but I've worked with clients from all over the world who have told me the same, it's not really the dumb thing. Now, I believe that there is something to be said for the ability to promote yourself. So it's how do you take the best elements of the American culture, but subtly apply them in a British or non-American culture. So that's what's brought me to where I am today.
That's really interesting, because we were just chatting about this before we got onto the interview, and just so many of the business owners that I work with struggle with this. They say, I want to do PR, I want to promote myself, but I just feel like I'm bragging or blowing my own trumpet. I just feel really uncomfortable. It makes me feel a bit icky. And that certainly sounds like your experience as well.
Definitely. I get loads of people. In fact, I had a client contact me out of the blue recently. He'd read my book, and I just got this email saying, number one, I genuinely said, first of all, a confession, I'm an Australian and I've read your book. But he said, when we ended up working together, he works for a large corporate, he said specifically it was that phrase, without sounding like an idiot, that appealed to me. And I explained to him that, and people need to have this belief, if you are someone who worries about sounding arrogant or sounding stupid, you have an inbuilt safety valve that will stop it happening. Because if you think about people who are arrogant, they tend to be people who either aren't even aware that they're arrogant in the first place, so they don't have that valve in their head that says, hey, maybe I'm going too far, or they are totally aware of how they come across and don't give a hoot anyway. So if you are someone who worries about it, that will stop you ever becoming that person who is totally arrogant or totally in your face. But I think it's that sometimes I say to people, you just got to put your big girl pants on and get on with it, because if you don't, you're going to get left behind. And it's that balance of pushing yourself to promote yourself in a way that helps your business and doesn't hinder it by, I'll just sit here and do a really good job and hope that people notice. Because there are some people out there whose service isn't half as good as yours, or whose product isn't half as good as yours, but who are good at promoting themselves, who are stealing the people that should be your customers.
And I often find myself saying to people who say exactly the same to me, is that actually when you're out there, you're being genuinely helpful, you're providing helpful content, maybe you're blogging, or you've got a podcast, or you're doing Facebook Lives, and you're genuinely trying to help people, then you are unlikely to come across like you're bragging or blowing your own trumpet. Yeah. It's just really when you're out there and you're just saying, look at me, I'm brilliant, I won this award, I'm amazing. And actually, it's the same when it comes to pitching to journalists as well. Journalists aren't interested in that kind of pitch. So, yeah.
I say to people, when you're thinking about your brand at a very basic level, the best brands convey two elements at the same time. The best brands convey what? And by that, I mean, here is what this person brings to the table, what knowledge they've got, what experience they've got, what credibility they have, what sectors they've worked in, what products they do, you know, all that sort of stuff that I should pay you money for, that is your what. But the best brands also then bring who. Who is bringing that what to the table? Because people buy people. You know, you could have the best service ever, but if I think you're a bit of an idiot, or even I don't know anything about you, that emotional connection of wanting to buy from you is lessened. There are people in life who try and get by just on selling the what, by being, I'm the most technically brilliant person in my field. That'll take you so far. There are people who try and get ahead just on the who. You know, I'm a really great person and therefore you should buy from me. But the best brands go out with both things at the same time.
One of the objections I hear a lot from small business owners in particular about promoting themselves is they say, well, I don't want it to be about me, or I don't want people to know about my personal life. I don't want people to know about my family. What do you say to people about that?
Okay. Number one, you are your best USP. Because when it comes to products and services, there are a lot of people who are likely going to be doing exactly the same thing as you're doing. So differentiating on what you offer, very hard. You can bring your uniqueness through bringing your personal element to the table. However, you are not there to tell all and sundry the ins and outs of your private life. That's not what this is about. But this is about choosing a few, I call them relationship hooks, that you have consciously thought, I'm going to put these out there and I'm going to be happy that that's what people know. So let me give you an example of a relationship hook. I call it a relationship hook because it's a little bit of personal information that you throw out there that other people can hook onto. So you have a more of a relationship than just a business transaction. So one of the things I do, one of the hooks in my personal brand, if you go on my bio or my site or you read my LinkedIn profile, I mention that I'm a fan of the Archers. And I have chickens and bees, I live in Yorkshire, and I drink Rioja at the end of a hard day. Now, it also mentions I've got a 15-year career in PR, and these are my clients, and this is who I've worked with. But do you know the things that people always talk to me about when I meet them, you know? And which genuinely, I had a guy who said to me, the reason I'm giving you my business is you're a fan of the Archers, and that's good enough for me. So But the point is, there's plenty of other stuff I haven't told them about myself, and nor will I. But I have put those out there because, from my brand point of view, when I was in corporate life, I used to occasionally get a bit of feedback that some people found me a bit scary and intimidating, probably because of the job I was doing. And I was quite demanding of, I need these answers. So I'm always conscious of softening my brand. So those relationship hooks I've chosen, which are absolutely true, you never lie, but they're there to show, no, there is this really soft, down to earth, you know, at one with the earth sort of side to me. So it's about choosing, what do you want to show that you're human? Because if you put nothing out there to help me understand that you're a real person, it's harder for me to connect with you.
That's so true. And for those who are not from the UK, we probably ought to explain the Archers. Can you explain what the Archers is?
The Archers on the BBC, there is a radio serial, soap opera, that's been going for goodness, 50, 60, 70 years. And it is literally a tale of farming folk. And it is a very gentle soap opera. You know, a whole episode can go by with nothing much happening than some lambs were born. it's very low key compared to most soap operas with murders and explosions going on. But it's an institution in the UK. And it used to be seen as quite old fashioned and fuddy duddy. But I think there's an uprising of people who have become fans.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a very sort of British thing, isn't it? Which is kind of nice. I mean, I totally agree with that. I often have this conversation with people because I have chosen to share a few things about my personal life. There are some things I would never share in a million years, but there are some quite personal things. So, for example, I've written a lot about my experience of miscarriage and infertility, and I've made a video for The Guardian, which some people listening may have seen. I've written opinion articles on that, and it's actually been quite good PR for me as well. I also share about the fact that I work in a she shed at the end of my garden. Everybody knows about that. I'm a runner. Everybody knows about that. I've got a daughter. Everybody seems to know about that. But they are things that I've selected. They are things that I've decided that I'm kind of happy sharing. Some of them are a little bit more personal than others, but there are certain things I would never, ever want to share in a million years. And I think we should all kind of have that filter. But I think sometimes there is this fear that sharing something means that you have to share everything. And it's just not true, is it?
And the other thing to accept is there are people who will be turned off by what you've shared. I mean, some people will read that I'm a fan of the Archers and go, oh my goodness, no, don't want to work with her. Now, that's absolutely fine, because that's almost helping you sift through without you having to do any hard work. Who are the people who are on the same wavelength as you and who are on a different wavelength? Some people will find it a negative to hear, oh, she's talking about infertility and birth and stuff. That's all a bit private. Don't want to work with her. Well, the point is, if they want to work with you, you're going to be saying to them, you need to share a bit of yourself. And if they don't like you doing it, there's no chance that they're going to want to do it for themselves. So that's not a good working relationship for you or them.
Exactly. And I actually had an incident a little while ago where I wrote a piece for the Daily Mail about why I wear makeup when I'm running. Now, the Daily Mail, in their unimitable style, decided to run the piece. It was supposed to run around the time of the London Marathon last year, but they decided to run it late. They put a new headline on it, which said, this woman wears makeup whenever she runs and thinks that you should too, which is not at all what I was saying in the piece. And now, because I've worked in the media for 16 years and I'm a journalist myself, I decided, you know, it wasn't really ideal, but it is what it is, and just move on and just have a laugh about it. It wasn't a big deal. And I actually shared it in my Facebook group and just shared it as an example of kind of what can happen and how a story can get changed. And you know, most people, they took it lightly. We had a bit of a laugh about it or whatever. But a few people really took umbrage to that article, and they said things like, I think it makes you look vain and shallow. They were really upset for me, saying you should get them to change the headline. And I was like, well, look, I know how it works. I know that that's not going to make me very popular, and really, I should just move on. It's really not the end of the world. And I said to one lady, actually, in that conversation, I said, look, you know, if people think I'm vain and shallow when they read that article and they can't see beyond that, they're probably not my kind of person anyway. We're probably not going to work together, and, you know, we should really move on. But anyway, this lady, she left my Facebook group on account of me saying this. And that's horrible when that happens, because I think we do have to accept that, like you say, you know, there are some people that will be turned off by the fact I talk about my experience of miscarriage, that some people will think, oh, the Archers, that's not for me. But I think that's kind of the reality, isn't it? You know, people like to do business with people, and we have to kind of attract and repel in our marketing. Yes.
I mean, I challenge people on my workshops. I say to people, tell me a brand that everybody loves. And some people go, Apple. I go, really? Because I don't love Apple. You know, I'm an Android person. And some people say, oh, John Lewis. I go, right, okay. But have you ever seen anyone complain about John Lewis? Yes, of course they have. And there is no brand that everybody loves. So you are setting yourself up for a fall if you think that you're going to have a personal brand that everybody loves. So why not just accept this won't be for everybody? The key bit is working out what your brand is in the first place. And that is what gives you the strength. And I'm going to give you genuinely, I've just gone to my inbox to look at an email that I got yesterday from this is a woman who runs a training company who I have done some training for, gone in under her umbrella, and I ended up working with her on her brand. And interestingly, she, as part of her brand, she does a lot of training for people who are in the financial industry, so people with quite technical backgrounds. And as part of working at her brand, she said, the thing I want to do, though, is to make financial learning interesting and fun and engaging while they learn. So we'd worked this out on her brand a few weeks ago, and it really mattered to her to train people as she would want to be taught. Okay, so she did this workshop recently, and most of the people on there were beginners, but their finance director happened to come along on this course. And afterwards, he said, oh, well, may I give you some feedback? This was really good. This was really good. Personally, though, I think that it was a bit too much of the chat, a bit too much of the flip chart. I think you should have had much more technical information on your slides. You know, you should have really sat behind your laptop a lot more. And was basically, you know, saying, I don't think you had enough gravitas. And she actually said, once he left, I opened up my brand pyramid and found that all his criticisms were how I wanted to be. If I hadn't done this thinking, I would have been totally sunk by his comments. That's word for word what she's put in her email. And I think it's true. The reason for doing your brand is, there's a quote from Marissa Mayer that I use in my workshops. She's a lady who's the CEO of Yahoo, who knows how long for. But she says, if you need the user to tell you what you're selling, you don't know what you're selling. Now, I'm going to assume that your listeners, they have products and services that they know inside and out. They would not go on the market with those without knowing them completely back to front and front to back. You should be doing exactly the same thing with your brand. It is just as important as what you're selling, because this is the who you're selling. And when you know that, when you spend time working out what your brand is, your ability to take the knocks, to take the criticism and to think, that's fine, you're just not buying my brand, but somebody else is, becomes a lot easier.
And you've got a step-by-step, I guess, a system that you walk people through to sort of discover their brand. Can you talk us through that?
Yes. So the first thing is, I say to people, I've described a personal brand as you've got to sell both what and who in equal measure. So that's sort of a top line thing. But then what I think that you need to do is actually work out that what and who in more detail. And so when I work with people, we split out, you know, what are their values? So what are their principles and their beliefs? What are their motivators, their drivers? That's part of their brand. What do they want their reputation to be? Accepting they cannot dictate that, but they can influence that. What do they think their behaviors are, their personality? What are their particular skills and strengths? And what is the image, i.e. how are they packaging that brand? So those are sort of six areas that what and who extrapolates into. And I liken that what you're trying to do is at the end of this exercise, come up with on one page, your brand defined in those six areas. And it needs to be the equivalent of being a signature dish. So whereas a chef, top chefs can cook hundreds and thousands of different dishes, if they have the queen come into dinner and they only get one chance to impress, they will have their signature dish that showcases with a few ingredients everything that makes them great as a chef. Your brand wants to do the same thing. So step one in any of this process is, what ingredients have you got to work with? You can't say that your personal brand is, I make the best omelette ever, but when we go to your cupboard, there's no eggs in it. So time spent thinking of, well, what are my values? What does motivate me? What would I like to be known for? How would I describe my personality? Doing that, I did it for myself. The very first brand I worked on was mine. And I used to do it on my morning commute. I had a 40-minute train journey. So I would sit and only ever on the way in when my brain was fresh, I would write myself one question a day. You know, what am I particularly good at? What do people come to me for help with? What are my skills and strengths? And I'd ponder it for 40 minutes. So that's the first step, is getting everything out of the cupboard and onto a piece of paper, all of your ingredients. However, you're going to end up with too many ingredients because, you know, that's a lot of stuff to sell. So the next step is to go through everything that you've written down. That initial step is a brain dump. This next step is a cleanup. It's about saying, out of all of these ingredients, which are the really strong ones that I think that is absolutely who I am and what I'm all about? And which ones are the ones that when I look at them, I go, yeah, sometimes, but maybe not. You keep in the ones that you're 100% sure of, and the other ones you do the equivalent of putting them back in the cupboard. So then you've got your sort of key ingredients. What you then want to do is the third step is expanding on those ingredients, really digging down into some detail to help people explain, understand what you mean. So it's the difference between someone saying in their signature dish, cheese is one of my key ingredients, and someone else specifically saying a extra mature cheddar that's been, you know, done in a Cornish milk from cows that have been out in the fields, you know, it just brings more detail. So for every ingredient, it's asking yourself, what do I even mean by this? And when you've got that clarity, putting it then into this format of the six key areas to write down in black and white, that is my brand.
And can I just rewind you a little bit to the first couple of steps when you're saying, you know, gather your ingredients and get rid of some as well? Have you got any examples from either your own business or a client of the kind of things that you kind of might think are really great, but actually when you think about it, they can go?
I have a prime example, and I quote this again and again, because let's talk skills and strengths. What makes you good at your job? Now, when I say to people, as well as doing workshops, I work with people one-to-one. And when I say, what are you particularly good at? What's a particular skill or strength? Time and time again, I get phrases like, I'm really good at problem solving, or I'm really good at delivery, or I'm very adaptable, or strategic thinking. That's one I get a lot. Now, until I did this job, I would absolutely have agreed with those people that those are skills and strengths. Having done this job, I've realized they're not. If I give you problem solving as an example, loads of people go, I'm really good at problem solving. So the thing is, if I come to them and give them a problem and they solve it, that's great. But the problem solving is an outcome, not actually a skill or strength. What's interesting is, how did you solve that problem? What skill did you apply? What strength did you use? So for instance, I worked with someone who, when I said, what makes you good at solving problems? They said, I don't presume to have the answers. I'm really good at knowing who else has the answers and going collecting that information. Someone else, when you say, well, how are you good at solving problems? This was a banker I worked with. They said, most people don't even like problems. I love them. I want people to bring me problems because I love that satisfaction of overcoming them. Someone else, how do you solve a problem? There was a woman on a workshop the other day. She said, common sense. She said, I apply it. And I find that a lot of people don't actually possess it. So you've got three people there who are all solving problems. The outcome is the same, but the actual skill or strength that they use is entirely different. And that's the difference between they're all saying cheese, or they're one saying I'm a brie, one saying I'm a boursin, one saying I'm a, you know, a smoked cheddar. It becomes more distinct the more you can go into the detail.
So we got to step three, didn't we, where you sort of choose
choose best bits. There's also in there, you want to get a reality check. So once you have worked out what you think your brand is, it is very useful to find out if that's how other people see you or if you are kidding yourself. And I genuinely did this myself. So having done the commute and each morning spent time thinking about my brand and drilling down into the detail, I created my brand on a piece of paper. What I then did was I emailed a number of people. One was my ex-CEO, some press officers who'd worked for me, some early clients in my business. And I just asked them a few questions around, how do you see me? How would you describe my brand? What might I do better? And I got a bit of feedback from a guy who was one of my earliest clients, really quite a full-on character. And I'm reasonably full-on as well. So we'd got on very well. And in this email, which I got at the end of a particularly bad day when my confidence had been knocked, he used this phrase. He said, Jennifer, your brand is strong like double espresso, but sometimes I'd wanted tea. And it was just this bit of, oh, okay. Now, at the time, I was actually, because of where my confidence was, I was really knocked for six by his comment, because essentially he was saying all the things that I already knew were strong about my brand, I already also knew can become a weakness. He had encapsulated in that phrase. He'd be, you know, you've got strong opinions and you're very full on, and that's the double espresso bit, but I didn't always like it. And I'll be honest with you, my instant reaction was, oh my goodness, okay, I'm going to have to change. I'm going to have to tone down what I'm like. I'm going to have to keep my opinions to myself more. And that was genuinely my first reaction was, I need to alter my personal brand to make him happy. But then I slept on it and woke up the next day and reread his email. And I genuinely call it my epiphany. When I'm reading this email, Jennifer, your brand is strong like double espresso. And I put a mental full stop at the end of that and thought, too flipping right. I've spent a few weeks on a train working this out. Why do you get to ask me for tea? Nobody goes into Starbucks and says, give me a double espresso and can you put a shot of Earl Grey in it at the same time? That would be disgusting. So I have very clearly gone out to market saying, I'm a coffee person. You get it from my emails, from my website, from my tone of voice, everything. If you want a tea person, there are some fantastic tea experts out there, but don't come to me looking for it. And that was that sort of this getting your reality check on whether you see your brand as others see it. You can get an awful lot of confidence from it, even though it can be a bit of a scary exercise and slightly, you know, slightly hurtful at the time. But that guy did me such a favor. He gave me a shorthand for my brand, which is double espresso. I literally go out shopping for, like, say I'm looking for a dress for work. I will be shopping with my sister and I'll hold up a dress and go, is that double espresso? And she'll go, no, put it back. Or is that double espresso? Well, it's single espresso, but if you added a big necklace, you could ramp it up to double, you know. And it helps me work out how do I convey my brand, because I'm selling coffee.
And what's interesting there is that you also had to get comfortable with the fact, and we did touch on this earlier, that some people wouldn't like you or your brand. And that is something people do struggle with a lot, isn't it? The idea that's the exact point
that I started to accept. I'm not going to be everybody's brand and it's not up to me to change. It's up to me to just accept that and to convey coffee even louder so that the coffee drinkers come my way and the tea drinkers go elsewhere. Because we're back to that thing about, you know, the woman who left your Facebook group. You're not on the same wavelength. You're never going to agree about this. So let's save everybody time. You know, the quicker people can decide if they're buying you or not buying you is better for both parties.
Definitely. And what's your next step after that then?
So it is that pulling everything into the recipe. It's you've done your thinking, you've decided which ingredients you're keeping, you've gone into the detail, you've set out what you think your brand is, and then checked with other people. Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. You see me as champagne and caviar. I see me as champagne and caviar. This is good. So then it's just putting it down in black and white on a piece of paper. I genuinely carry a copy of my brand stuck into the back of my diary so that I have it on me at all times. I mean, I don't refer to it so much now because I know it inside and out. But for instance, when I go and pitch for jobs, because I mean, I'm a one-man band, same as many of your listeners are, I have been known to sit in the car beforehand and read through my brand in the back of my diary to remind myself before I walk in that door, this is who and what we are selling. Not just my service, but the person. And I can give you an example. In the very early days of my business, I used to have a bit of a strap line of what I wanted to be known for, which was the antidote to yes men. And I believed, and I think it is true based on my business now, that the value add I give is telling it straight to people. So I went and saw this guy, really big, well-known businessman in Leeds, up near where I live. And he said, tell me a bit about what you do. So I told him, blah, 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 personal brand, and help you with your LinkedIn and define what your brand is. So I told him all of the what I do. And he was going, oh, okay, yeah, that's quite interesting. And I said, but let me tell you how I'd do it. And this was the first time I had ever verbalized this strap line out loud. So I was a bit nervous. And he said, I said, I'm the antidote to yes men. And he said, sorry, what do you mean? And I said, well, everyone's going to tell you what you want to hear, but I'm going to tell you what you need to hear. And that was the point. He went, that's brilliant. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Great. I want us to work together. So he bought the who. There was other people could probably have done what I did for him. But when I told him what my who was, and you know, how I'm just going to tell it like it is, that was when he bought me. And it's scary. And you think in your head, you sound like a complete numpty. But based on his reaction, it did not give me a lot of confidence to keep saying it to other people.
It's interesting. I interviewed the brand strategist Phil Pallon back in episode 105. We talked a lot about this, but he's worked with me on my brand. And when I first went to meet him for our first meeting, he recorded me and recorded the things that I said. And I was saying things like, look, there's no nice way of saying this, but you know, if you go out to a journalist with an idea like that, then they're just not going to, they're just not going to buy it. It's a complete waste of time. And I was saying things that even I didn't realize, actually, that that I was quite so strong and quite so feisty about. And and he was, you know, making me like kind of write this all down and reading it back to me. And I used some of those words and phrases in my copy on my website. I still do. Yes. But often I think sometimes you're not as aware as how you come across to people as other people are, which is really what you were saying about going out and asking people.
That's a really good way of doing it. I mean, years ago, one of the very first brands I did was with a guy. It was a Scotsman, a businessman. He was up in Aberdeen to this. Yeah, you know, we didn't meet, but I was talking to him and I interviewed him for a couple of hours, and I really drilled down into people's brands. And then I sent him his brand, and I'd used this phrase, living life to the max, a couple of times in the brand. And he phoned me, he said, I like the brand, I'm not sure about this phrase. And I said to him, Ali, can I just say, you used that phrase 4 or 5 times in our discussion. You used it relating to this, you used it relating to that. And I fed back to him when he said, you know, your father had died and you said you believed you had to live life to the max. And what I loved was his openness. He went, do you know what then? If that's what's coming out of my mouth, that's what needs to be in my brand. So it's exactly what you're talking about there. But people shy away from it because the written word seems so different from the spoken word. And I think when people, you know, write down what they are speaking, they go, oh, that doesn't sound right. But I totally believe that if you would say that out of your mouth, you should be able to put that in writing and have it sound the same.
Well, that seems like a really, really nice soundbite to finish on. So thank you. You've shared so much value. And where can we find you if we want to know more about you?
If you want to know more about me, my website is jennifer-holloway, like hollowayroad.co.uk. That's a London landmark for people who aren't in the UK. Or you can just look for personal branding for Brits. Or if you just go on Amazon and put in the phrase personal branding, my book comes up at the top. So I'm very easy to find that way.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much for that.
Thank you for your time.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come over and join my Facebook group? It's simply the Soulful PR Facebook community, and I'd love to see you there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.